you ever wonder what parenting is really like? Do you think that you're the only one that's struggling? Or have you missed out on that amazing hack everyone was talking about? Well, that sounds like you. Grab a seat and get comfy, as you'll be hearing real life stories from parents that are on the same collective journey, a little thing called parenthood. We'll hear from parents, caregivers, and experts as we fumble through this wonderful path together. I'm your host, Rashida, and welcome to the Parents Connecting Podcast. Hi, everyone. It's Rashida, and welcome back to the show. Today, you're going to be hearing my conversation with Jacqueline Baird, a mom and entrepreneur. On this episode, you'll hear her journey to motherhood, which includes infertility, loss, and grief. And if you've experienced your own losses, some of the conversation might be difficult to hear or even triggering, so I wanted listeners to be aware. What we talk about in Parents Connecting are the real parts of motherhood, which include those under-the-hood moments that get watered down but are just part of real life. And so nothing is off limits here. And Jacqueline has her own podcast called Motherhood Intended, a very successful show that has created a big following, where she too shines light on the many topics of motherhood that get hidden behind the highlight reel. And Jacqueline takes us through her story that spans about a decade of what she went through, the discovery she made about her own body, and how she ultimately conceived her children that she has today, including another one on the way, which you'll hear about in part two of this two-part episode. We go into a lot of detail about the process of each of her pregnancies, and so I've broken this up into two episodes so you'll get to hear the full conversation and the very real raw moments of what it can mean to get through the years of trying to have children. So listen in and subscribe now so you don't miss part two when it drops. Now, let's get into it. Well, thank you, Jacqueline, for being on the show. I'm super excited to talk with you. Yeah. I know you have a really unique story for your own journey to motherhood. So I figured we'd just get into it and tell us how you became a mom and all the experiences that you've had along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to chat with you. It's been, you and I chatted, I think it was earlier this year, but I was so excited to get on your calendar and be on this podcast. Yeah. So to start my story, I've always known I wanted to be a mom. That was just a given. As a little girl, I don't know what I want to be when I grow up with my career, but I do know I want to be a mom. So, and my husband was on the same page, and he's 5 years older than me. So when we met, you know, we had a pretty quick engagement and, you know, got married a couple of years later. And, we were like, all right, we'll just give it a year and then we'll start to try and start our family. And it makes me laugh now because I think back and everyone always said like, oh, just, you know, enjoy your marriage.
Wait a couple of years.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay. I mean,
how young were you when you got married?
So I was 25 when I got married. Yeah. So at like 26, almost 27, we started trying. And I'm very type A. So I was just, and maybe this is the millennial in me too, but I want it now. When I'm ready, let's do this. And so when it wasn't happening, we weren't getting pregnant. I was just getting very antsy. So, you know, talked with my OB, let her know that we were ready to start. And she's like, all right, I went off birth control and got put on a prenatal. And 6 months later, we just still weren't pregnant. So, you know, in my OB had said, and I think this is kind of the standard, if you're under 35, they're like, try for a year. If you're not pregnant in a year, come back and talk to me. Well, that wasn't like working for me. Cause after 6 months, I was like, I don't know. I feel like something's just not right. So, ended up going to see a reproductive endocrinologist just to do like the initial testing. You know,
and so what do they do? So it sounds like you actually didn't wait till 1 year, which is kudos to you. Cause I do think it's really easy to just.
Yeah. Well, and at the time I kind of thought that like you needed, like that was a hard and fast rule, but I didn't need a referral to a fertility clinic or anything. I, you know, just explained, and I think they kind of like saw me as well, because I've always had like really painful periods and really heavy periods. And I've, had some LEAP procedures in the past with some abnormal paps and you know, my whole like reproductive health just kind of seemed, I like had this like feeling that something was just maybe off. So after 6 months, I went to a fertility clinic and they tested they did like blood tests. They did an ultrasound. They did, I think it's called a hysterosalpingogram. I think something like that, but basically it's where they shoot dye into your fallopian tubes to make sure everything is open and working. They get a good look at like your uterine cavity and all of that. And it was at that point that they discovered that one of my fallopian tubes was blocked. So essentially it was, you know, kind of cutting our chances in half. Mm-hmm.
Did your clinic, when you went in there after 6 months of not being able to get pregnant, were they hesitant to see you? Did they have any, or were they a kind of,
I don't remember them asking like, well, has it been a year? And I think if they did, I probably just said it had been, because I just was so adamant about getting answers. And I was kind of hoping that just like, at least to just rule everything out. Like, even if I went there and it was like nothing, I'm like, all right, well then we can move on and I can be patient as long as I know nothing's wrong. So yeah, it was my fallopian tube was blocked. And then my, thyroid levels were a little bit off, and I guess nothing to the point where like, I didn't realize any of this, you know, I didn't have any symptoms that I knew of in my regular life, but for trying to conceive purposes, they wanted it, my thyroid to be in a different level. So I got put on medication for hypothyroidism. And then I had a procedure done to unblock my fallopian tube.
Oh, and so then, was that an invasive procedure, or was it a recovery time?
I don't remember there being anything, any kind of crazy recovery time, but I do think I was put under for that. And it wasn't in the hospital. It was in their offices, but yeah. And that was 2015, I believe, that I had that done. So I'm like trying to go back. And yeah, after that, they were just like, all right, and try again. Like, this should be fine. And I think we tried for another 6 months and still no luck. And so I went back to the fertility clinic this time. I've kind of moved on from my OB, and I was like, all right, this is what they do. Like, I want to get pregnant. They help you get pregnant. And it seemed like the standard was to just start us on, I started taking Clomid, which kind of like ramps up your, and I'm probably butchering this right now, but like ramps up your, like, kind of like your egg production. So, increases your chances. And, so Clomid with an IUI, intrauterine insemination. So, and my husband had gotten tested at this point, there was nothing wrong, you know, with him. And so,
which is important to talk about, I guess, because at least from my perspective, or the very, you know, I don't know that a ton about infertility. And so there's so much emphasis on the woman. And so yeah. It's great that you also incorporated your husband just to make sure that things were working over there. And so that you can at least know where to focus your efforts.
Yeah, absolutely. I was really glad that like that was part of their standard protocol, because mm-hmm. I've heard from other people who, you know, go months of treatments and they're like, oh, and we finally decided to look into my husband. Right. And I'm like, well, yeah, it takes two to have a baby.
Yeah, exactly. So
I am like always preachy about that, because I'm like, don't waste your time. And like, it could be, and for like male factor, a lot of times it's a simple fix. It could be like, they just need some supplements to increase sperm count, and a few months down the line, it could be so much better. You know, it's just, you never know. So definitely always like check both sides. So I was really happy that that was kind of their standard care is to start there. But they did tell us that if a Clomid and an IUI, if that's going to work, it'll work within like the first 3 or 4 tries. And so we're like, okay. So we did one, didn't work, did two, didn't work. And I did all these cycles back to back. And the Clomid medication for me was just terrible. I mean, I just felt like so inflamed, and like, I was just like crawling out of my skin. It just really messed with my hormones and everything, like emotionally and physically. And so the first 3 didn't work, and like, okay, they said 4. So let's just give it another shot. And, on the 4th one, we did get pregnant with twins, which was very exciting. And I'll never forget, getting the call that we were pregnant. And then she told us like my HCG level. And I don't remember the number now, but I just remember it was like high, like for the very first one, it was like in the way hundreds. And I was like, obviously this is my first time. Like, I'm a first timer here with the positive pregnancy test, but this feels aggressive. And like with a quick Google search, it was like, it could be multiples, or it could be. Cause the level was so high. And I was like, okay. And so we went for our first ultrasound, which I feel like when you're doing like fertility treatments, everything is like a lot sooner. And I didn't know this until like my own sister-in-laws and people in my life were getting pregnant. And I was like, wait, what do you mean you don't get an ultrasound until like 10 weeks or whatever?
Right.
Yeah. And I'm like, I was there at like 5, like ready to go to like, and that's just, you know, because everything's so controlled and they need to know if, you know, it worked and everything. And so, yeah, on our very first ultrasound, they saw two sacs, and we were expecting twins.
Do twins run in your family?
They don't. Well, it's funny because I've had to explain this to you. Like, they don't run in my family, but I do have brothers. My brothers are twins, but my mom actually had fertility. They did an IUI. This was back in 1994, but yeah.
IUI for the audience?
An IUI, it's intrauterine insemination. So basically, you are put on medications prior, and then they give you a shot to like basically control exactly when ovulation is going to happen. And then you go into the office and they like basically inject the sperm, inseminate you. And so I didn't know this until later on in my journey, but while it is very helpful, especially for people who don't have like a slew of issues trying to get pregnant, if it just could be something as simple as maybe like the motility of sperm and it just needs a little extra help, something like that. It's very helpful, but it actually only increases your chance of success. And for me, this just sounds low after going through IVF, but I think it's like 15% chance of success or something more than like a regular cycle on your own. Whereas like once we got to IVF, we were given like a 70% chance of success. And so it was just wild to me in hindsight, like,
and an IUI is your first, is that like the first mode of defense, for lack of a better word, instead of going to like an IVF, which.
Yeah.
Okay.
It seems to be. Yeah. And it's different for everyone based on like what your, what your infertility kind of diagnosis is. We were undecided at this point after fixing my fallopian tube and, you know, being on the thyroid meds and everything. There seemingly wasn't a reason why I shouldn't get pregnant. So that's why we started there. And I think this was the case for us too. I mean, IUIs in terms of like, just like financially are way cheaper. And
I was just going to ask you about the insurance concept. Like, does this covered under insurance? Or because I think that's like a whole different.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's a whole thing in itself. But yeah, I think our insurance like covered so many a year. And I've heard from other people that a lot of times insurance will make you go that route first before even like before covering any part of IVF. And our IVF experience wasn't covered by any insurance that we had. But that's a whole nother conversation. Cause I'm like, that's so messed up. You make someone go through these IUIs just to when, yeah. So pregnancy was confirmed. They confirmed that we were pregnant with twins. And, you know, without having anything to compare it to, this is obviously my first time being pregnant. I felt great the first part of the pregnancy. You know, first trimester, I wasn't like, everyone has their own experience. I wasn't like super nauseous or morning sick, but I had, you know, a little bit of nausea but overall I just felt really excited. And at this point, really just like blissfully hopeful and, not worried because I have no reason to be worried at this point. And it wasn't until it was at 14 weeks, I had some spotting and let me try and remember. Yeah. Had some spotting and I went in to, of course it was a weekend. It's not funny, but I just, every time, even with my kids now, every time there's someone sick, something's going on, I'm like, of course it's Saturday. And I'm like, well, we were like going to the ER. So I went to the hospital and, you know, they hooked me up to the belt to try and like monitor and see if there's any contractions or anything, but at 14 weeks pregnant, you know, you're so small and, they couldn't really tell anything. And I wasn't in any pain. I wasn't like feeling contractions. Not that I really knew what that felt like at that point. Especially, you know, with being in so early, I wouldn't have felt it probably anyway. So, they couldn't see any reason. The baby's heartbeats look good on an ultrasound. So I was sent home and
not to like TMI, but
yeah,
I think when people say spotting, I'm curious, like, is it just like a little bit? Did you have like, where was your level of concern? Cause I think people don't really know.
Yeah. And and again, it's funny because this is my first pregnancy. I mean, it wasn't much. It was just like a little bit. But I was like, oh my gosh, you know, like my knowledge at this point, I was like, you bleeding means like miscarriage. That's all I know. And so, I know now in pregnancy and after being pregnant, you know, there's a threshold and every situation's different. And there's reasons why you could have bleeding that aren't necessarily a miscarriage. So
I mean, I think your first time for anything, anything is like you're on, you know, I don't know, like high alert. Because I think I remember, like, even with like amniotic fluid, I'm like, oh, is that? It's like kind of funny now, but is that me or is that amniotic fluid? And,
yeah, and it's like you don't know.
Yeah, it's, I mean,
totally, that's the first time, totally normal.
The same thing. Yeah,
like, yeah.
I went to the hospital because I'm like, I don't actually know, and they always tell you go in.
Yeah,
like, it's way better to be safe than sorry. So
absolutely, and I have like stuck by that forever. I'm like the slightest thing, I'm like, okay, I'm going in. And so yeah, I went back and everything seemed to be fine. I felt fine. I kind of went on with everything. They said, you know, I think I had a scheduled appointment maybe the following week. And they're like, you know, if it gets worse, then please come see us. But otherwise, like, you know, we'll see you next week. And I was at home trying to remember. It was just a regular evening at home. And I just went to go to the bathroom, like, not because of any kind of pain or anything. I was just living my life. And, you know, I sat down to go to the bathroom and it was almost like, I've never experienced this, but it kind of felt like my water broke. Like, that's the best way to explain it, except I was just bleeding. And,
oh, wow.
Wow. This is at 14 weeks. And it was in the bathroom and I was like, oh my gosh, like, okay. And I was downstairs and I don't know what I was thinking. I just like knew, like, all my own personal stuff was upstairs. And so
yeah,
I just, ran upstairs and I was like, okay, I just need to handle this, try and stop the bleeding. And then I had to tell Josh that we need to go to the hospital or need to see the doctor. And it was just, I mean, it just wouldn't stop. And it got so scary. And I just like yelled for my husband and I was like, we need to go to the hospital or something, but I couldn't figure out like how to even, I was like, call an ambulance. Like, you need to call an ambulance. Cause this is getting too bad. And, so I went, and at this point we live 3 minutes away from the closest hospital and like 8 minutes away from our hospital that like I was born at, all of our doctors were at. And so, but I guess due to, you know, how I was seemed when they got to the house, we were taken to the other hospital, and we were in the ER and, you know, of course, like the ultrasound tech that comes in, you know, I'm trying to explain, I'm like, I'm pregnant with twins. I'm still like actively bleeding, like in the ER. And, you know, she comes in does an ultrasound, and I know this now, like they don't say anything. The doctor comes in and kind of tells you what they see on the ultrasound. And she was like, did you say you're pregnant with twins? And I'm like, yeah, I'm pregnant with twins. And she's like, I'm so sorry. Like there's only one sac. There's only one baby. There's only one heartbeat on the ultrasound. And I'm like, and I know, I just don't know much at this point. I knew that like, okay, miscarriage. I was prepared for things like that to go in and be like, there's no heartbeat. I was, you know, I just wasn't understanding like why, how is there only one twin? And I knew like maybe from early on, like I heard things about with twins, like you could, one twin could absorb the other. I don't even still know too much about that, but it was kind of on my mind. And, she basically just said, I'm so sorry. And, you know, follow up with your OB tomorrow. Like you need to see your OB. And I'm like, okay. And wow. I was literally sent
home. That's all they told. Oh, really?
Yeah. I was sent home and my mom was with me. My husband was with me. I mean, I can't remember how much time passed in the ER, but like, I was never moved to a room where I was staying of any sorts. I was like in triage, like in the ER. And
well, what did they say about like because you obviously went there because you were bleeding. And
yeah.
Did they address that at all? Or did they just say, we just see one heartbeat? And
so once they didn't really address that at all. They didn't say that at all. They were just like, I'm so sorry. There's only one heartbeat. And then they said, and they monitored me until like the bleeding kind of had stopped. And I mean, it wasn't like completely gone, but I definitely was not. And I was in much better shape than when I got to the hospital. And that was it. Like that was it. And that whole scenario really messed me up for years. Yeah,
traumatizing.
Yeah. And again, the next day I went to my OB, they did the same thing, the ultrasound confirm, which what I had already known. And they did, I think they did a cervical check, but it was also like tricky because of there was still one baby with a heartbeat and they like, didn't want to, it was a tricky situation because we didn't know like what all was I think it was after that ultrasound with my OB, they really looked at to see, like, they didn't see any remnants of like a placenta or any tissue left over, because that's what they're worried about. They're worried about infection. And they, in hindsight, I don't think they were telling me completely everything, because I don't think the chances of our second twin surviving were as great as I thought. Like, I was so hopeful. I was like, okay, well, there's a strong heartbeat. We're still good. Like, I didn't really understand all the whole medical side of it, obviously, at that point. And so, I mean, and it wasn't until later that, like, and no one ever said it to me directly, but I had delivered one of the twins, like, with all the blood and everything. And I didn't see anything. I mean, this is a 14-week gestation twin. I would have known, I think, what I've said. And especially, like, as my story goes on, I now know what, like, a small baby looks like. And it just, there was none of that. So I don't know the details of, like, how that all happened, but I literally delivered one of our twins. And, So after that, I was put on.
And how are you feeling? Like, I mean, even just in that day from when you went to the hospital to your OB appointment, like, how are you, like, what is going on through your head? Like, how are you even managing that? Like, what?
Yeah, I'm trying, like, looking back, I think I probably was just like a shell of myself. Like, I think I was just on autopilot, but it was so confusing, because I was like numb from what happened, but like trying to be so positive and hopeful. I mean, we just tried for so long to have a baby. I was like grasping on to like that this has to work out. Like, this has to work out. And it wasn't until, so I went to my OB, and then she put me on, I think it was like a modified bed rest. It wasn't like don't move, like a kind of bed rest, but I was supposed to be pretty much on the couch. And I'm trying to think, in that time frame, I think maybe it was a week later, we already had gotten our results back, because we did whatever the test is at like 13 weeks to determine like the
gender or the, yeah. Well, it's not really a gender test, I guess. They always tell you, don't tell, it's not a gender test.
Right. And yes, exactly. And everything chromosomally, everything that test showed, I mean, everything was normal with the babies. And at that point we did decide we were going to wait to find out the sex of the babies. And I don't know. I felt like I just wanted to know after losing one. And at that point we found out they were both female, which was a very weird feeling. Oh, I just remember like crying, opening that envelope, because I was so joyful, because I'm like, you feel all of a sudden connected to this pregnancy. I mean, at 14 weeks, at 15 weeks, you're still like, you know, you're not feeling kicks yet. You're not like,
it becomes real almost.
And I'm like, wow, it's like a person, people in there. And, but then it was just sad knowing that, like, you know, sisters, and one was with me and one wasn't. And it was just all the emotions wrapped in one. So another week went by. At this point, I am 16 weeks along, and I started having spotting again. And in those 2 weeks, like, the bleeding had stopped. I mean, cause I was like on high alert for any kind of changes, anything. And so as soon as it started again, and at this point it wasn't a lot. It was kind of like the first time I barely felt there was barely anything. But I went into my doctor, they did the whole thing again, hooked me up, baby looked fine. This time I stayed in the hospital, I think it was like 8 hours, basically the whole day, and nothing had changed. And I know this now, I think you have to be 20 weeks along to be in like the mother baby unit or whatever. Like, I was just in like a triage room. And so, you know,
interesting. So, cause like when you go into the hospital, like they won't, oh, okay.
Yeah. And I didn't realize that at the time, and I didn't learn that till later on in my story, but yeah, I was just in triage, cause I was only 16 weeks along. And nothing changed. So 8 hours had passed, and she was like, you know, there's really nothing else we can do but monitor you. Like, what do you want to do? Like, do you want to stay here? Do you want to go home? And I was like, at that point, I was like, you tell me. I'm like, you tell me. Right, I'm like, do you feel comfortable with me going home? Cause like, I'd obviously rather be home. Like, I'm not in pain. Nothing has changed. You know, my poor husband and my parents are just sitting here staring at me in this hospital bed all day. Like, I am fine going home if you're comfortable with that. And the doctor, my OB at the time, was like, we're comfortable with that. I wouldn't send you home if I didn't feel comfortable. There's nothing else we can do. Now, in hindsight, I And I don't know, I don't know what the right call would have been. It probably would have been the same. I just wish, and it probably wouldn't have helped to give me more information, because again, there's nothing I can do differently. But I went home and I remember my mom was with me. My husband was with me. We were just like watching a movie, couldn't go to sleep. I couldn't get my mind off it, whatever. And it got late. And it, actually while we were watching the movie, that's when I started to have some like cramping. And when I say cramping, I mean, I've experienced contractions after this and I would not call this a contraction. Like at 16 weeks, like what I was feeling, it felt like a period cramp, like something like that. But I was aware of it and it was like every 20 minutes at this point.
Wow. Okay.
And I don't think anyone really knew what could happen. Cause again, like my mom, like she was like keeping an eye on me and she's like asking me how I felt and everything, but you just don't think of like labor at 16 yeah. weeks or just like being able to deliver or anything like that so abruptly, because that's what ended up happening. I went to, my mom left, my husband and I went to bed, and I don't know what time it was at this point, but middle of the night, because I woke up, I mean, I did go to sleep, and that's just to also say that like that what I was feeling wasn't enough to like keep me up. And I woke up out of like a dead sleep. I just like remember sitting up in the bed like immediately. And, you know, my first instinct was just to run to like the closest bathroom. Cause I'm just thinking like, oh my gosh, I actually don't know what I was thinking. I was just on autopilot. Like my body was just like, oh my gosh. And I literally, I got to the bathroom and I typically wear glasses and contacts, and you know, I was pretty blind. And in hindsight, like I'm kind of like, thank God, but I ran to the bathroom and I couldn't even get to the toilet. I delivered.
Oh, wow.
And I remember just standing there, like hovering, like, but just frozen. I was just like basically screaming and frozen. And my husband, I just remember him running, and it felt like 10 seconds from the moment I ran to the bathroom to like paramedics showing up. And these poor paramedics, I think about them all the time because they were the same ones who were there 2 weeks prior.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They're flustered. I mean, I can only imagine from their point of view, and they were all men, like walking in to what they saw, because I was in shock, obviously. And, oh my goodness, there was so much bleeding, and they had to, you know, they cut the cord. So
at this point you knew that you delivered.
It was very different. Oh yeah. Okay. This was different. You know, because I'm like pretty blind. I didn't have my glasses on. I didn't see my daughter, but I knew like that I delivered. So I was laying on the bathroom floor. They came, you know, they had to cut the cord, and they, I remember them like literally, and this might be TMI, they were like rummaging through my closet. Like they found like a literal shoebox to like transport her in and wrap her up. And, I was in really bad shape at this point. I mean, I couldn't even tell them my name. I remember like when we got to and this time my husband was so adamant. He was like, I don't care. Like you need to drive the extra 5 minutes to our hospital. We just, especially after experiencing like just the care we received at the other hospital. And, so at that point, I was in really bad shape. I remember like throwing up in the ER, and they were just, I was losing a lot of blood, and everything else was just like a blur. I remember asking like, where's my baby? I knew enough. Obviously I knew that she could not survive outside of me at 16 weeks. But I just was not in a good state of mind. And so finally I was taken to labor and delivery. You know, they had her in I forget what it's called, but like a little, like a cuddle cot situation, in the room with me, but she was behind like a curtain, and I ended up I had to attempt to deliver the placenta. And I haven't gotten to any kind of classes or anything. I don't even know what is going on right now. And I don't think it was successful or fully successful, because then I had to get rushed into have a DNC to remove anything else, so there's just no infection in anything that was immediate. And so I was put under for that. And then I just remember waking up and they're trying to like get labs for me. And I mean, I just, it was It was
did terrific. It feel frenzied? And like, do you, because like as you're recalling it, like do you, because it, like you mentioned, you're on autopilot, it's almost like you're,
yeah,
you know, you're in a state of shock, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And so do you recall like having, I don't know, like what your feelings were and like what you wanted, and just even even just remembering the details, because sometimes I honestly believe that we forget things intentionally.
Oh, you for know, sure. Just because you, for sure.
I think it's like too traumatizing to like remember all the details.
Absolutely. I mean, honestly, until I retold the story in full, like on my own podcast, yeah. I don't think I had ever pieced it all together. Mm-hmm. I think even to this day, I mean, it was almost like I didn't have feelings about any of it because I felt like an object. I was just like taken to one scenario to the next. And like, that's how out of it I was physically and emotionally. And even I think the first time I kind of like came to, and I remember having like strong feelings, but I didn't know what they were, was when, you know, everything calmed down after the DNC, after I woke back up, after I was back in the recovery room. And the very first nurse asked me like, do you want to see your baby? And I remember being terrified and saying like, I don't know. And I like remember looking at my husband and like looking like what's the right answer here? And so they didn't push it, and they came back, and finally a different nurse was like, you know, do you want to, I mean, she was right on the curtain, but I didn't get out of the bed. I didn't like, I was just like frozen there, like kind of, I remember hoping just like, I just need this. I just want to get through this. Like, I just want this to go away. I want all of it to go away and like be done, because I can't like emotionally handle this right now. But I'm really grateful that there was another nurse who came in and said, you know, would you like to hold your baby? Like, I know it's a little scary. I'm like, but she's perfect. She's got 10 fingers and 10 toes and all these things. And I'm like, okay. And I am so, so very grateful that I did, because, you know, and I was in my parents, my in-laws, they came, and I mean, it was pretty surreal memory for everybody. I don't think many people have seen a 16-week gestation baby, you know, and, but I'm so glad that we got to hold her. We have pictures of her and fingerprints and handprints. And it was crazy, but it was also very clouded with so much guilt over our other twin. And like now seeing, obviously she was a little bit smaller 2 weeks prior, but like now seeing our daughter, I just, that really, really messed me up for a long time.
So many emotions.
Yeah.
And so how so, like, can you give some details into like what that, I mean, I can't even begin to imagine what that would have done, but how did that affect you? Maybe how long did that affect you? Because I know this isn't the end of your journey. You have quite a long journey still to go.
Oh man, I don't think I realized at that time how much that experience like really rocked my world and my mental health. Because I, after the dust kind of settled after, and I say this now, but it never settled like until years later. But
I mean, I get chills like as you're telling your story, and I'm sorry for your loss. Like,
yeah. I appreciate that. It is. Yeah. It's, I, no one should go through any of this, but, I think even afterwards, you know, I was kind of just like, okay, that was terrible. And you know, we put everything on pause for like 6 months. We're like, I can't even begin to think of going through that again. But at the same time, we didn't have any answers still. And so I still wanted a family. Obviously we still don't have children. And, we took a pause and we decided, you know, we'll try an IUI again. Cause we were so like, at this point they just chalked it up as like, well, we don't know. They did test. I'm trying to remember. They tested one of the twins. They tested the placenta to see if there was any kind of infection or chromosome abnormalities or anything, and everything came back fine. So we really didn't have a lot of
part
answers.
So I don't even actually know what happened to the placenta after delivery. Like, is that like something that they do just because it was premature, or is that, I don't even know.
Yeah. So to my knowledge, with my experience, like, and every time they've done that with us, like, yeah, it was along the line, it was just trying to get answers and to see like what had happened. So in this situation, they didn't really conclude anything from it. So they are kind of just, they chalked it up at this point to multiple pregnancy. It's a high risk pregnancy. And that really makes me angry looking back and the more knowledge I have now, because I'm like, no, people have twins all the time. And yes, they are high risk pregnancy, but for as early as I was and how I delivered, that's not the end of that situation. So, but again, at the time you only know what you know. So we knew that we got pregnant. The only time we've ever gotten pregnant was with an IUI. So we're like, okay, they said 3-4 tries that worked. Let's give it another try. And in hindsight, you know, I'm not surprised. We went on to do 3 more and none of them worked. And I'm not surprised. I wasn't even in a mental or physical state to be successful at that. And now, you know, now after so many years and experiencing a lot more, I realize now that it's in any pregnancy, it's a whole body experience. Like you have to really be at your best self. And I was in no way, shape or form, my best self during that time. So,
and were you working during this period of time? Like, how did you manage that? And I mean, I know there's probably gotta be so much stuff that happens during those 2 losses. And then after, like, how did you manage?
Yeah,
that?
That's the other thing. I was working full time. I was working full time in, community management, doing event planning and marketing. And, so I worked from home, which was nice in regards to like my medications and things, but I think I had to go at that point. I'm trying to remember. I think I had to go into the office like maybe once a week. And I remember my boss being like
pre-COVID, like before working
right.
from home was like
yes,
a thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah. I was like, and it's funny because I wanted to work from home. I took this job when we, at the time prior to this career that or this job that I had during all of this, I was working in an office in the city and it was like an hour long commute back and forth. And I was like, I'm not, and I didn't love it. And I was like, I'm not doing this when I have a family, like I need a more flexible job, blah, blah, blah. And so I took this job like in preparation of like, okay, we're moving to the suburbs. We're going to start a family. I did not know it would be like 6 years to follow before we actually had a family, but, I was working full time. And I remember, I had no idea. I didn't feel worthy at the time of like anything. I'm like, yeah, I had a miscarriage. Like it's people have miscarriages.
Right. There's
time.
No postpartum period. Like that's
no, there's
the
no,
yeah.
Like
but there should be. Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah. And I was working for a very like tech progressive company and I still didn't feel like comfortable being like, I need this off or this off. And my boss was great. I mean, she even asked me, I remember the first time I went back, cause I went back to work. I think I took off maybe a week mm-hmm. and you know, in that week too, like I had like, and I didn't even know this could happen, but like I had milk coming in,
right.
And like oh, I, gosh. Things you don't think about, or I just didn't learn yet. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think a week later I went back to work and my first day back at the actual office, you know, my boss sat me down and she's like, how are you doing? And I just thought she meant physically, you know, and I'm like, oh, I'm okay. I'm fine. Like I'm fine. And she's like, no, like, how are you doing? Basically like, why are you here right now? Kind of thing. And she was a mom. She had 2 children. She was a little bit older than me. And so she just was even just understood postpartum. And
yeah,
I was
that's
like,
great that you had that experience. I think in just so many fields, you're talking to male bosses or male counterparts and they've just got, and you know, it's not necessarily their fault, but they just don't have
right.
the same experience or clue.
Yes. I was so, so grateful that she was my boss at the time because she was like so kind about everything. And she even said, she's like, you can take time off. Like, just tell me, like, you can take off, do whatever you need to do. And I think at that point, I remember telling her, I was just like, I don't know what to do. Like without, I mean, I didn't have kids yet. This is what I do. Like I just continued working, but I mean, I was given so much grace at that point. I mean, you know, I paused my events at least, so I wasn't face to face with people. But I kind of kept my everything else going at home on my computer, but
something to keep you going almost. So it was, I guess, good in some sense so that you had,
I needed something to, well, and I know this now that I really should have sat in it a lot longer and dealt with it. But at the time, the only thing I knew to do was like be productive.
Yeah.
And so later on in our story, this is why I think at that time I didn't have a lot of these feelings and cause I just kept plowing through not only with like things like work and just my regular life, but you know, with trying to still have a family. So after those other 3 failed IUIs, we decided to switch fertility clinics because we didn't love the care that we received with our fertility doctor. after our loss. And I know now that there's so many doctors and everyone has their own lane. And like, as a fertility specialist, you know, their job is to get you pregnant. They're not there to discover your reoccurrent loss, or they're not there to discover or to be your therapist or whatever it is. And I think we just kind of like assume we'd go in and they'd be like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, what can we do differently kind of thing? And he was just like, let's get you pregnant. And I was like, oh my God, like, I'm not even know if I'm like fully there yet. I was hoping you'd like guide me kind
right.
of.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that that's a reasonable thing to expect just because they're in the, like you said, in the field, but it's like when you go to a doctor and you're having some, like the physical pain is like one thing, but then there's the whole emotional thing behind it. You want somebody to be able to, like you said, yeah, almost be a therapist at times.
And yeah. You know. Yeah. And I think like there are, and I have met doctors who are very good at both. And I'm happy to say that like the fertility doctor we switched to, she was like, the first time we got there, she was like, I am like, so sorry for everything you've experienced. Like, you've been through enough, like, let's figure this out. And
that little bit is so, it's, I mean, and honestly, I don't even think that's like wanting a therapist or not. It really is just like connecting with somebody, like just like being validating human. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right. No, exactly. Exactly. And just even that first two sentences out of her mouth, I just felt so comforted and validated and seen. And, you know, she was kind of appalled that we had done so many IUIs with the Clomid medication. She's like, yeah, that's like a lot of hormones on your body. And that's just a lot. And so she's like, I would have never let you like go back and do those three more IUIs, especially following your loss and everything. So, you know, at that point we felt really confident in IVF. And I don't know why, but I just,
and sorry. Yeah. So for IVF, because I think that's also maybe for folks that haven't gone through that. So what is IVF? And maybe just like, I mean, I know that's like a whole thing, but
yeah. Thank you for stopping me, because I'm like, in the world of like infertility, I just like ramble all these things that I just assume everyone knows. So IVF is in vitro fertilization. Yeah. In vitro. So the difference is it's very controlled. It's a little more involved upfront, meaning you have to take medications to prep your body, basically to produce a ton of follicles, which hopefully turn into a bunch of eggs. Then you have an egg retrieval where they pull out all of the eggs. And then the sperm is, oh, and then they are, I'm trying to remember. And this is all like layman's terms, because I'm not.
Yeah, of course. We'll put links in the show to like.
Yeah, for, yeah. To educate. Yeah. Yes. But basically, so to give an example, I think I want to say I had say 22 eggs retrieved, and I'm 29 at this point. So I had a really good egg count and egg quality was fine. But that as the days go on, like they, it all kind of like dwindles down to what's viable to become an embryo. And then even then they and put the sperm and the egg together. And yeah, so it all kind of dwindles down. So from like,
and that 22, all happens outside of your body, right? So you,
right.
They retrieve the eggs and they're doing all this other stuff.
Okay. Yeah. So it's, if I remember right, I think it's a span of 5 days, because our embryos are five day embryos. So they inseminate the eggs and then they kind of just like in an incubator kind of situation, like wait and see what develops into an embryo. And then what embryo makes it to day five, in which at that point, people choose to either freeze them and then wait and do a frozen embryo transfer or do a fresh cycle, which is what we did. So on day five, they took an embryo before freezing it and transferred it. And so after 22 eggs that went down to, we had eight embryos. And which was really good. I mean, we were hoping like before we started, my doctor was like, yeah, I guarantee like you'll get probably three or four given your age and like the quality of your eggs and everything. So we were ecstatic with eight. Now at this point, we did not do any sort of genetic testing on the embryos. IVF was a huge expense at the time. And yeah, I think it was like another like $4,000 to have them tested. And my doctor was like, you know, I don't see any red flags in either of your medical history. You are young in the fertility world, meaning like under 35. And, so she's like, I don't suggest it. Now in hindsight, I wish we would have done this. And I would recommend, I'm not a doctor obviously, but I would strongly encourage everyone to test the embryos, because later on in our story, we did find out we had eight embryos, that first transfer worked, and that is our son Hunter. He's almost 5 and a half. We went on to have a second son with a frozen embryo transfer when my oldest Hunter was one. We were like, I think it was a fluke the first time. Like, we don't know how long this is going to take, how it's going to go. Sure enough, a year later, we got pregnant with a frozen embryo transfer, which is my son, Noah, who's 3 and a half.
Wow.
But we later on in our journey, and I'm jumping ahead just to talk about the embryos, but we went back and tested our frozen embryos. We had six left, and out of those six, we did lose one in the thaw, because they have to thaw them to biopsy them. And of course they told us it's like a less than 1% chance of losing one in the thaw. And honestly, this is so sad, but we were like prepared. We're like, you know, we're not really good at statistics, being on the right side of statistics a lot of the time. So that left us with five. And out of those five embryos, two were abnormal, like not viable for a transfer. One did show, I think it was trisomy 21. And the other one, I can't remember if it was had an extra chromosome or missing, but they like the clinic wouldn't transfer those. Not viable for pregnancy. And then we had two normal embryos and one that was labeled mosaic, which it's still a little fuzzy on what that exactly means. But from my understanding, when they test these embryos, they're taking 5 to 10 like cells. And so a mosaic one is just like, they basically don't have enough information one way or the other on that embryo. So
indeterminate, you don't really have confirmation either way.
Yeah. Yeah. And people do transfer mosaic embryos, but of course, if you have normal ones, they will start there. But I was just kind of blown away that, you know, out of these, we'll call it seven, since we lost seven embryos, like four of them were normal, like genetically normal. And I'm like, my sons could have been like failed transfers.
Miscarriages.
It could have been like a serious health issue. Like, it is wild to me. So I think,
And is the genetic testing that they do at the embryo stage similar or the same as the genetic testing that they would do, like if you're pregnant, like I think at the 10 week or 13 week mark?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I want to say yes, because I know, I mean, it just like that test, it doesn't test for everything. Like it doesn't test for obviously like any kind of like, genetic, like my son, for example, my oldest son was born with club feet, and we didn't learn that until his 20 week anatomy scan. So, you know, it doesn't test for all genetic issues, but, I would say they're similar, but definitely don't quote me on that.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was the whole embryo situation, which is wild. And, but yeah, I'll kind of skip through. So IVF was successful for us in getting pregnant. Now, my pregnancies were not without many hiccups.
So the first one you said was a fresh transfer, meaning that wasn't frozen and they transferred it back into you. And then I guess, what do you know immediately? Like how quickly? I mean, these are probably some really very basic questions, but.
No, it's interesting. Because they're 5 day embryos, you know, like in a normal pregnancy, you know, you miss your period. It's 2 weeks later, essentially, that you are the 2 week wait. You're waiting to find out. It's like 5 days sooner, basically. The transfer, it's like, I want to say it was like maybe 10 days until pregnancy test. So then you find out. And yeah, we were obviously ecstatic that it worked. It was just one, you know, we only transferred one embryo, and the risk of an embryo splitting to like twins is like 1%, I think it is. Okay. So we were very ecstatic, and at this point, honestly, not too worried, because it was a single pregnancy, because we weren't really given any answers. We knew,
that how long was this? How long was this from the prior?
I miscarried the twins in September, 2016. And this was about September, 2017.
A year later.
Yeah. About a year later. Everything seemed to be going fine for same thing. And of course, like with anyone, right? Like once you have a miscarriage or you have something unfavorable happen in a pregnancy, it kind of ruins it for the next time. And, so for me, I was like, okay, I felt like I needed to get past 16 weeks to feel better. And it was at 17 weeks that I started having spotting, and I was like, oh my God, I'm like, I can't. And so I went to the doctor.
Do you have like PTSD or how did you even?
For like so many different aspects. With my son Hunter, this pregnancy, I didn't actually think that I would. I wasn't worried at first about like delivering or any of the experience. It just felt so. I think after seeing like the doctor's reactions and like kind of dumbfoundedness after the twins and everything I experienced with that, it really did feel like this like crazy fluke that like no one had answers for. So I felt a little bit more confident going into this pregnancy. But yeah, when I had the spotting and again, it was minimal, but at this point I'm going in for anything. So, at 17 weeks, my cervix had started opening.
Oh, wow.
I had to have a rescue cerclage put in, which is basically they like go in and basically tie up your cervix in a procedure. And it was it was an outpatient procedure. We talked with MFM at this point, the high risk doctors, and they were like,
MFM is like so known to people. We had our own high risk journey on some of the stuff. So learning the term cerclage, we did thankfully didn't have to have one, but yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny with MFM, you know, I didn't realize until as my journey goes on that like there's so many reasons why people have to use maternal fetal medicine doctors and everything. And, but yeah, she was like, you don't need to worry. Like this will hold, this is in there. Good. We got it. Or like, but it just didn't. And, at 23 weeks, I think I was maybe 22 and almost 23 weeks. I went in for like a routine OB appointment, and I was really really thankful in hindsight that it was like the head of the practice that was my doctor at that point, at that appointment. And she's like, you know, it's not really standard to do a cervical check at this point, but given your history, you know, I would like to check your cervix. And I didn't have any more spotting after my cerclage. Everything was fine for the month to follow. Like we even did, I remember 2 weeks after my cerclage, it was my 30th birthday. We did like a big gender reveal party, and you know, it's just blissful at this point. And yet, I think this is a lot of my PTSD is like, I just kept being like built up and then just like something would always happen. So it's very, very hard. It gets increasingly harder to stay positive as our journey goes on. So she did a cervical check and she's like, I could see the look in her face. And my husband was traveling for work for this appointment. So I was thankful my mom was with me at the appointment because I definitely wasn't going to appointments by myself anymore. I was just always scared that something was going to happen. Oh, and, she looked at me and she's like, she turned to my mom and she's like, Mom, she looked at me and she's like, where is your husband right now? And I was like, he's in Kansas. He's traveling for work. And she's like, okay. She looked at my mom. She's like, all right, Mom, I'm going to need you to call him and tell him to come home. And she looked at me and she said, I'm sending you over to the hospital. You are 2 centimeters dilated and you're going to be there until you have this baby. And again, I'm 22 weeks right now. Wow. And I'm like, that is a very long time. I don't understand. Like I just, you know, burst out into tears. So they sent us right over to straight to the hospital to talk with an MFM doctor. And, you know, they're laying out all the different scenarios. And this is another situation. I didn't really love his bedside manner, but again, everyone has their own lane and he's here to present hard facts. And that's what he did. And, I guess the part I didn't like was he was really pushing towards like to get me to think about the outcomes of all the risks, you know, if I deliver a child, if I make it to delivery or viability, I should say, which is 24 weeks. Although these days with technology, it's crazy. Babies at 23 works, but yeah. You know, if I make it to viability and deliver, the amount of risks, it's like 50% chance of survival, 70% chance of cerebral palsy, like all these like insane statistics. And he was like, you know, you have to think of your family, like you're young, like you don't have kids yet. Like I've seen couples break up over this sort of thing. And like really kind of pushing like all these things. And I've never met this doctor before. And so I don't even know if he knows my history and how hard we've been trying to have a child. And And man, it gives me chills when I think about that conversation now, because my healthy 5-year-old is on his way to kindergarten this fall. And, but I get that that's his job and to lay all that out there. But I also was kind of frozen because I couldn't make a decision on what to do. He's like, we can try and go in and, you know, put in another cerclage, but the risk is we could like puncture the amniotic sac and all this stuff. Gosh. And then you'll have to deliver anyway. And I knew it was too soon to deliver. He's like, or we can.
And so what were the decisions, I guess, maybe to be explicit, like what were they trying to get you to decide at that point?
Yeah. So at that point, it seemed like the three options were, yeah, to go in and try and fix my cervix, but that was risky. Or to terminate the pregnancy, or to go on bed rest and like strict bed rest, laying flat and just hope for the best, like hope that I can make it longer, and then no guarantee of what that outcome will look like with the baby being born so soon.
Okay. So when you went to the hospital, it wasn't that you were delivering within the next like 24 hours. It was just that, hey, your cervix is opening and you need to potentially be in, you know, I think bed rest or whatever the option.
Yeah. Is. That's a good thing to point out. Yeah. I was not like having any preterm labor at this point. I was not contracting or anything. And so they just put me on bed rest. They did give me, I forget what the drug was, but like steroids to help develop the baby's lungs in case of delivery. And, I think I was put on magnesium and all the things that they typically do. And I was there for, and this is the point where like, I just, because I wasn't in any pain, I wasn't in labor. I was like prepared to lay there for months. Like I was like, I have got this, as if anything I could have done, like would have, I know now that like, I was just along for the ride. Like my body was going to do what it was going to do. There was really no, aside from laying there, there's nothing I could do. So, I ended up being on bed rest for 8 days and still no pain, no labor, baby that, you know, they're checking his heart rate. They're checking his everything. Everything was good. And you know, this is probably TMI, but it was strict bed rest. Like I could not get up to go to the bathroom. Like everything I had to do was in the bed, like laying flat. I couldn't even bear, like, I remember one time I was like slightly elevated and the nurse was like, we're going to put your headrest down a little more. And I was like, okay, geez, like, whoa. And at this point too, I always forget this part because it is literally so minimal in the whole scheme of things. But weeks prior I think it was a couple weeks prior, I was having, like, I thought I was having a heart attack. Like I was having horrible, horrible pains, went to the ER, ended up having gallstones.
Oh, gosh.
And in pregnancy, there's nothing, they're not going to like operate. They're not going to take out my gallbladder. So I had to go on like a no fat, like super low fat diet. So I didn't have any flare ups or anything. So I'm like on bed rest, like, you know, you're eating hospital food, whatever. I remember, Amazoning like all these like no fat snacks and stuff because I'm like stressed. I'm like, I need to grow this baby and I need to eat healthy, but I don't know what to eat. Like it was just one thing after another. And
so what happens with that you were in the hospital at that point when you had the gallstones sorry, you said gallbladder?
Yeah. So it was, I had gallstones. They discovered them. I went to the ER, like this was like 2 weeks prior to anything with my cervix. Like I just, because I had woke up in the middle of the night and had horrible pains. It felt like a heart attack, but, an ultrasound showed that I had gallstones, which I guess is like more common in pregnancy with hormones. Like if you're going to have it, I guess it's like a common to have like a flare up of some sort. So until I deliver, there was nothing that could be done other than like low fat, no fat. So I didn't have any issues after that, as long as I followed that diet,
Well, how hard is that to follow that diet when you're pregnant too? Stressed and oh my God.
Yeah. And now I'm like, and this is so like trivial and dumb, but like at that point I remember thinking like, of course, like I can't even enjoy like eating a burger or eating whatever I want, like in pregnancy, like they took that away from me too. Like
it's a small thing that like makes such a big difference though. But
those are the things that would just like, yeah, I just, the pattern of all of my experiences, I just really like, really started to just not, I was so mad at my body and just so angry. But, you know, so I'm on bed rest for eight days and I am not moving. And it got to the point where I'm so uncomfortable because I haven't like gone to the bathroom, like, because I just can't, like, not only is there people in my room, I'm like laying down and I'm like, so finally they felt comfortable with me. They're like, okay, like if you want to sit up, like we can bring like a commode to like the side of your bed if you want to try that. And so I remember it was like 6:30 in the morning and I just felt like pressure. And the pressure I would describe was like, yeah, like I haven't gone to the bathroom in 8 days. Like that was the pressure I was feeling. And so I remember my husband was sleeping on the couch in the hospital room. And I was like, yeah, you're going to need to leave. I was like, I know we're married, but this is like, I need some level of, I know you've seen a lot, but like, this is where I'm drawing the line. So if you could just get out. And the nurse, you know, left too. She gave me a call button in case of anything. And within, I mean, I got up and then the pressure I immediately knew was different. It was like heavy and I pushed the button and, you know, she came in and I was like, something's not right. Something's not right. And yeah, she could see that like I was delivering my, like he had felt like basically fallen into the birth canal. And I was not in active labor. Like I was not laboring. I was not in that kind of pain. And she like hit the buzzer. And this was like, I don't know. I think at this point it was probably because my son was born right at shift change.
Oh gosh.
So I think he was born at like, I can't remember if it was 6:58 or 7:03 or something like that. And so everyone was kind of in, it's kind of a weird blessing, but like double the staff were in the hallway, like kind of conversing for shift change. And so she like hit this emergency button. And like, when I say that 50 people ran into the room, and she had me lay on the bed and I pushed one time and delivered my son.
Wow.
And that was through my cerclage even, like I had the cerclage, and that's how, like, to paint a picture of how weak my cervix was and how it would not hold. I mean, like in a normal pregnancy that doesn't open. I mean, you have to labor to get that to open, and mine just wouldn't even hold with laying down. So, and that what to follow was really scary because of course, you know, we were prepped for this, but like, I guess prepped and like told, but no, nothing will prepare you obviously, but like they have to, you know, he wasn't breathing at first, obviously. So they had to like, kind of like they had to resuscitate him. And then they, you know, were checking all his vitals, doing all the things. And
they did this all in the room, like
all right in the room. Like they had it all set and ready. Like there was like,
the room was prepped for potential preterm.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. They were like, which is also why in hindsight, I'm like, oh, like they didn't think I would like go to like any sort of reasonable week. Like they were ready at any moment for me to deliver, but I suppose telling me that wouldn't have helped. So, I was just trying to be as calm and positive as possible. So at this point, you know, when he was born, he was 24 weeks and 5 days, which was scary because I knew it was like enough, but like not, I just didn't know what that was going to look like. So, you know, he was wrapped in this, I remember he was wrapped in this, like, almost like look like foil to keep him warm. And it was handed to me. And I remember the doctor like asking for a phone to like,
so you're going to hold your baby, like
very briefly. Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. But I remember thinking like, what are you doing? Like, just take him. We knew he'd be whisked away to the NICU. And I was kind of in that point, just more just terrified. I'm like, just save him, like do what you need to do. But again, I don't think they would have handed him to me for a quick picture if they weren't confident. And so I'm very, at this point, you know, very happy to have that, even though it's a really hard memory to look at because I'm just like frozen with fear. But, it was a whirlwind after that because I guess in recovery, I still didn't really know. Then they had to deliver the placenta, which was painful, but successful that time. And yeah, I remember then the nurse coming in, I think it was 2 hours later after all of that commotion and I'm just in there by myself. I think I showered or I can't remember, but she came in and it was like the lactation consultant and she's like bringing in a pump. And I'm like, what? Like, again, I didn't get this far. I don't even know. Like, I didn't know.
What is this thing? Yeah.
Yeah. And so she didn't ask. She was like, okay, so we're going to hook you up to the pump and we're going to do this. And that became like my sole task for the next like year, but definitely the next 4 months. Cause yeah, our son ended up spending 4 months in the NICU. That came with a whole slew of things, but I'd say the first the first 3 to 4 weeks were really scary because there was just a lot of unknowns. He had like a PDA of the heart, which is very common in a very premature baby, but basically in very like layman's terms, it's like a valve that like doesn't fully mature. So it's not closed. Oh,
wow. Okay.
So he had to have surgery to have that closed. And he had a grade 3 brain bleed, which was scary. And that ended up resolving on its own with medication. It was just, and then the biggest thing obviously is like learning to the 3 things for like a preemie that age is like to suck, swallow, and breathe, like things that they should not be doing yet, obviously, because they should be inside of you. So it was a very, very slow process of, you know, he had a feeding tube for a while. And then even when he started like learning to take a bottle, it was like 3 mLs a day, like not even in remotely an ounce a day. And then it would just kind of gradually go from there. And then the breathing, they'd wean him off all the different kinds of like CPAPs and oxygen. And it was just 4 months of trying to taper off of everything, and have him grow. And yeah, there's a million details I can share with that, but basically, you know, after.
And where were you and your, like, and it sounds like your family in town where you live.
Yeah.
So how did like that whole process work? Cause you can't live in the NICU. I don't think so. I'm sure you're coming in and out.
Yeah. We are really grateful to be, I mean, we were like 10 minutes from the hospital, and both of our parents and siblings are all local. So we had a lot of support, which I don't think it'd be very hard to do without. You know, we did meet a lot of other parents in the NICU who had all sorts of situations. And we were both really thankful too, that we both had jobs where we worked remotely. My husband,
were you working during this period of time or?
So I was working, I took disability, you know, during my, like hospital stay, bed rest, those okay. couple weeks disability. And then maybe it ended up being like 3 weeks or maybe it was 2 weeks of disability, I think. And then once he was born, I took, I think maybe 3 weeks of my maternity leave. I had 12 and then I tacked on, you
know, wow. That's, yeah. That is really progressive to have 12 weeks.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, I was working this tech company and this was, you know, 5.5 years ago, and it was, I had 12 weeks, like full pay maternity leave. But I didn't want to waste it. Cause there's really wasn't much I could do.
That's
I mean,
true because you have, okay.
Aside really from pumping, I wasn't the primary caregiver at that time, which, I mean, we spent every single day up there, and especially for that first month. Eventually, maybe after 2 months, we got into more of a groove where we would like tag team, or we had nurses. The nurses were unbelievable, amazing. They're still really big parts of our lives. We do different March of Dimes walks and things with them. And, wonderful. But they finally were encouraging us to like, why don't you guys like go out to dinner or something? Like you can, it's okay. Like you can take a night off. Cause there's so much, you know, guilt and like the thought of leaving your baby alone and all these things. But honestly, to survive, and when we knew our stay was going to be long, we had to kind of get to that point. So
how was your marriage? I mean, maybe it's like the last thing on people's minds, but I'm sure that's a very testing situation and hormones are all over the place. Did you guys like have tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. It's interesting because I think it's weird. And when I looked at our whole journey as a whole, and even up until this point, and that point, we actually were, our marriage was actually very strong during that point. We really came together because it was like, we both had this goal in mind of having a family, and like our son was here, and we both wanted to be parents so bad. And so I felt like we were like this power team at this point. Granted, it's different to say that when you're going up and back from the hospital and my husband's supporting me and like in pumping and taking care of me. And it was just, we were very in sync at this point, but it's a very unique situation, with, you know, being up at the hospital and dealing with nurses and doctors, and you're not just at home first time parents trying to figure it out. But I will say when that time came after those 4 months and were able to bring my son home, and I think he came home at like, I remember thinking like, oh, I hope he just gets to like 4.5, 5 pounds, because whatever it has to be in a car seat or whatever. He ended up coming home like 9.5 pounds. Like,
oh, wow. That's great. Months.
So he looked huge to me. But even when we came home, it was like, we were this like team, with him, and we were both so involved and, you know, we learned a lot. Like this weird silver lining of having your firstborn in the NICU is like, they taught us to change diapers. They taught us how to feed him the certain way. They taught us, you know, he had a lot of refluxing, and he was also in physical therapy because of his feet, which we knew from the 20-week ultrasound. So he had casting and surgery on that. And I mean, we were very in sync at that time. Now, as the story goes on, it gets a little bit harder, but yeah, at that point in time, we were just kind of ecstatic that he was here. We were just in awe that he was here, and everything seemed so minimal. I remember like the nurses telling us like, you guys are so positive. Like every time we come in this room, you guys are just so like happy and, you know, just hopeful and positive. Yeah. And I'm like, in hindsight, it was like, we were just ignorantly positive. I mean, we're just so happy that he was even here after what we experienced with the twins, that we felt like we were in good hands and anything could be fixed and help him. And as long as that, like, he's here. So that was just kind of our perspective, which wasn't usually, I guess, the norm when you have a baby in the NICU. So, yeah.
So that was great. It sounds like you were on a team, you were together, and you could, because this was your first, so you're not necessarily worried about a child at home.
Exactly. We were not juggling all the things, and even our work, because it was flexible. You know, my husband did take off, I think it was a month or so of travel, so he wasn't traveling. And I took off the events portion of my job. And so, yeah, it wasn't, aside from that, it was just, our focus was on him at that point, which was, thank God, because even when he came home, it required a lot. I mean, he had all these different therapies and follow-up appointments and things. So it was a whirlwind for those first like 6 months of being home, but it was probably not as hard as it could have been given our situation.
Right. Right. So then fast forward. So it sounds like within a year or 6 months, then you decided to, sounds like you did a transfer of another embryo. Is that your second son?
Yeah.
Well, folks, if you want to hear Jacqueline's story of her second son and everything that's really happened in between, and there is still a lot more to go, stay tuned. So hit the follow button, subscribe now, and so you don't miss part two when it comes out next week. And in the meantime, check out her own podcast, Motherhood Intended. She's doing great things for women on her own show and shining a light upon, you know, motherhood and all the nitty-gritty details, really. And she shares her story there. That's some of the first episodes that she shared with the audience, and where I heard her story myself. And it's just so amazing. I'm really in awe of all the things that she went through to become a mother. And so I am looking forward to bringing you the second part of our conversation, so you can see where Jacqueline is now and how she's doing. And even since our conversation, there will be a few updates to give you guys. So everything will be in the show notes. Reach out, subscribe, rate the show. And until next time, happy connecting.